Welcome, everybody. This is PMP Weekly, episode 126. It is 10th of May and spring is coming. It was snowy yesterday in Helsinki, but spring is coming. I'm confident on that. Now, my name is Esa Juvonen, and in the PMP Weekly, we always go through the latest and greatest on the Microsoft 365 news from the Microsoft and from the community. And we typically have a visitor, which we talk about the career and the impact of, let's say, the last year and all of that stuff with the visitor. I just can't make this intro work. It went really well. Now,
on a scale from 1 to 10, how likely would you recommend this show based on an intro?
Yes, but it started really well. Now, okay, so, let's do a quick intro. So my name is Esa Juvonen, I'm a program manager in my Microsoft 365 platform side, and with me as a co-host is Waldek. Let's show it to you. But it went really well, didn't it?
My name is Valdek Mostegat, and I am Cloud Developer Advocate for Microsoft 365 and Microsoft. And as Vesa already said, today with us is a guest. Yes. From the US, one of our MVPs, DRCS. Good morning, DRC.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good to have you here. Can you do a quick intro? Who are you and what do you do? And where are you based? In the US is a quite big state.
So I'm DRC. I'm based out of Rhode Island in the United States. If you don't know where that is, think of Boston and go south about 45 minutes. I have been in the SharePoint and Microsoft 365 world for about 12 years now. Gosh, time flies. And I specialize more on the UI UX side of the world, information architecture, and user adoption piece.
When did you, so coming back on, every single MVP which we talk around nowadays is like, yeah, I come from a SharePoint background, but now I'm focusing on Microsoft 365, which is quite often the case. How did you end up being part of the, or getting the MVP? What's your kind of a story on that?
Well, when I first started, I just loved being at like the SharePoint Saturdays and getting to know people and present, you know, some of the lower level topics. I always felt like I was never at the time good enough to present on like the level 300s and things like that. But I found that I could help people that were just like me and just getting started way back when. And that's kind of been my passion, is continuing to help those people that are just starting to have to do it for their jobs or things like that. And just kind of, you know, life evolved over time. And I found that this was a passion that I had, and the MVP was fortunately a reward for that passion, but I would do it nevertheless.
Yeah. You've been doing quite a lot of blogging and then presentations whenever that was possible. Nowadays, we're still in this.
Now we're in the virtual
it's
world.
It's still possible.
Well,
it's still possible. It's just different.
Yeah, it's different. It's quite different. There's a conference every single day, apparently, so...
there is, you know, Teams fatigue for sure.
Yes, exactly. But nothing taken away from any of the conferences which are being organized. But it's one of those things we're seeing a massive uptake on the remote conferences for sure. And then I think people are getting tired of having these meetings, even though it's great to see people, but still.
it'll come around, hopefully. I mean, things are hopefully starting to get better in a lot of places, and hopefully things will continue to improve over the next few months and years. So
I got even my first vaccine scheduled today. So it is not today, good but on Saturday this week. So at least in certain parts of Europe, this is already getting to the right. Sorry, Waldek.
Not in this part of Europe now.
We'll keep our fingers crossed for you, man.
Yeah.
Sooner or later. So. Yeah, apparently like my turn will be at the end of June.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So...
And then the second. Okay. Anyway. Sorry. Not necessarily a super funny thing, but hey, things are.
Necessary. I mean, it is important stuff, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Now, Darcy, let's talk about slightly your history. So, how did you end up actually being in IT? What was the? Well, how did you, from school directly, were you interested in IT, or was there something else?
Yeah, so it was, I never had an interest in IT at all, actually. Like, I went to school for music. I was a professional musician. I taught high school band. I loved being a teacher, and music was my passion. And in the United States, it's kind of a really complicated topic to be on, because I was in a district that was losing funding, and the school that I taught at unfortunately lost funding to continue having a music program. So I found myself being a highly educated person in my field without a job. And right. So like many other people, I had a friend who was at the time, the director of IT at a major university in California. And he was like, hey, if you go learn how to do this thing called SharePoint, I will give you a job. And I went, job sounds amazing. So it was back the late SharePoint 2007, early 2010 days. And I spent 4 months with a laptop and a sandbox playing around in the engineering library of UC Davis, trying to learn everything I could about SharePoint. And funny enough, I never actually ended up working with him, but he now actually works for Microsoft in the Azure space. So it's kind of funny how, you know, we evolve over time. And, you know, as my skill set evolved, more opportunities, you know, evolved. And there was a lot of people from the community that really helped my career over time and saw the positives that could come out of it.
Yeah. And then you started focusing directly on the UX and the end user side of the house, or mm-hmm. how did that was not from day one? Or
yeah, I did. So it was really funny. Another MVP, Eric Overfield, had a UI UX company based out of the little town in California I lived in. And he was kind of the first person to, way back when, you know, give me an opportunity to really be in the SharePoint space, not just try and do it on my own and learn. So it was kind of a natural progression. And I love design. I love art and, you know, that creative side. And so it was kind of the perfect opportunity to apply a passion of mine directly into the tech space in an area I felt comfortable in. So, yeah.
And that was probably then custom master pages and CSS and making the SharePoint not look like SharePoint.
The public-facing websites.
Exactly.
Yes. Now we're talking.
I think all of us three have been there. So.
Yep. I remember building all of those and wondering what all this code was. And this is back in the day where, you know, my boyfriend at the time was like the, you know, IT guy at the university. So it was kind of like, you know, honey, can you help me set up my computer so that I can go do all this other stuff? We've all evolved since then.
Yeah. Goodness. Yeah. But so the one thing I wonder about is, like, you've been around since, you said, late 2007, early 2010. How do you see evolving SharePoint UX and UI from there until now? Because, like, many things have changed. Like, we do things differently, things work differently, they look differently. How do you see it?
So I think there's a lot of good things that have come with changes over the years. And obviously there's a lot of bad habits that we got into that we've had to break or figure out different ways to do it. I like that there's a lot more consistency in things now, but it's really difficult because in a lot of clients, really the person who's driving the look and feel of the internet comes from marketing or comes from communications, and they are looking at public-facing websites for examples of what they love, because, you know, obviously intranets are not, you know, viewable by the general public. So it's a really tough conversation to go, okay, I see what outcome you're trying to achieve. Let's go talk about the different ways we can try to get there. And a lot of the design that I do nowadays isn't so much designing pages, but it's trying to design those custom experiences that fill a business process. Like things like, you know, locations directories or people directories, you know, trying to do integration work and things like that. So there's still a lot of design work out there, but since we don't have access to do a lot of the things that we used to, it's more figuring out how we can make those customizations fit in to SharePoint and not stand out like a sore thumb. So it's just slightly different adaption.
Yeah. How are you actually seeing the big push of also on the Teams side? So are you seeing more also Teams-related work for you, or is it still on a SharePoint? Or what's the demand for your customers?
Funny enough, most of my demand from customers is not Teams, because I think they all just kind of picked it up. And I think my Teams work will really come in the next year once, like, the fire hydrants turn off and they're trying to actually... Yeah. get their business models back. I think everybody just turned Teams on in an effort to get through the pandemic, and they'll go through and do the cleanup and governance and all that stuff later. We all kind of know how that one happens. Right. Most of my recent work, a lot of it has actually been migrations from like Box to SharePoint, and like terabytes of data that have to be re-architected and brought in. So yeah, it's a slightly different focus than what I would thought it would be. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, but it is an interesting thing, right? Because like you said, demands very much come and go in waves, and they're driven by what's going on around us, right? So even though like you might be an expert in UI UX, but people need this thing. And then you already see that in a while, they will need to clean things up, reorganize, re-architect things. So there will be more shift on IA as opposed to UX and UI, right? So it's like, it's very much seasonal work in a way.
It is. And the interesting thing with Teams is that Teams has done an amazing job at branding and having their own voice, especially in the community and with clients and partners. However, I think like one of the really important messages that's getting lost is that, great, you have Teams. Guess what? You also have OneDrive. You also have SharePoint as a result of that. And I feel like a lot of that messaging is getting lost, and that people are signing up for Teams and not understanding really how everything is integrated. And that actually, I think, causes more problems because, you know, people are like, I just want Teams. I don't want any SharePoint. And I'm like, that's not actually how this is going to work.
What? It's all SharePoint? Always was.
I got to hand it to Teams, amazing marketing, but it's a little bit interesting, you know, on the reality side sometimes.
So what's your bet or prediction then on the Microsoft Viva connection side of the house, now that we're getting it more visible for us?
I think Viva has tremendous opportunity, but I think it's also one of those, with great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah.
We saw when Delve originally came out, and Delve was kind of the first area where Microsoft tried to put the discovery of content and people together. And it scared people because all of this information started to boil to the top without context and without users understanding that there's security around that, and that you only see things like it caused a lot of harm because people didn't understand. And it's my fervent wish that as Viva starts rolling out, is that it's going to start bringing a lot of things to the surface, just like Delve did way back when, but in a much more powerful way that can impact a business a lot faster, and for both positive and negative. So I think it'll be a mix of, you know, making sure that governance and guidance are in place and change management's in place to be able to handle rolling out Viva, as well as understanding all the integration points. I think companies that are going to be the ones that roll out Viva, like the major Fortune 500 companies and up, are going to need a really strong technical team to be able to do the backside of Viva and make sure that it's going to perform and be able to be tuned to the business.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting.
Do you have any, let's say, preemptive tips for them that they could already start applying now or thinking about already now before they actually do a rollout?
I think a lot of it is figuring out, we know that there's certain verticals of what Viva is going to take into account, like things like projects, as an example. Understanding what projects you want to be discovered or known in the industry or in your tenant are going to be really important. Understanding what those verticals and topics and things like that are and pre-planning them now would probably be a really good idea, because that way, if you choose to turn it on and do a pilot or start working with it, you already are going to understand what are those major pieces you want to be shown and can tune it for that. And then also some of those things that maybe aren't right, and you know you're going to have to change the descriptions on the topic cards and, you know, pages and things like that. I think it's start understanding what content you have and what's important now.
Which is always actually super, super, super valuable, of having a clear understanding how your platform is being used and who's using that and what the content is there. So for sure. So, and that comes back on the governance planning, which is super, super important for sure.
Yep. And it can't be IT doing it.
Yeah. Well, I think, yeah.
Well, but I guess probably they have their own governance to do, right? Their own, they need to have inventory of their machines, computers, and systems and access and whatnot. But then there's everything else that it's not related to IT that shouldn't be done by them, right?
Exactly. Yep. It's got to be a partnership. And I think a lot of companies right now are struggling with that. So it'll be interesting to kind of see how it goes. I'm excited and yet terrified at the same time.
So coming back on something what you said, because this is something that's talked with Waldeck quite a few times related on the adoption of Teams and what you're seeing from your region related on the customers, that basically everybody was forced to just enable the Teams and didn't have a time to really think through what does it mean and the change management and everything else and just deal with it. And that's probably something what we can then see that, for example, adoption of the extensibility models and solution integration and everything else, it's growing, but it's not over the roof yet. What would be your kind of a prediction? Or do you have any thoughts on when or on when will the maturity model be more mature? When will
August
be the customer?
23. Yeah. August 23.
Will it happen this year? Or what's the kind of, what are you saying with customers?
For the extensibility story or?
As an example, on Teams, okay. Yes.
So I think there's a lot of things coming with extensibility that are really great. I love the idea of being able to bring in the cards, the adaptive cards to do things. I think a lot of organizations are still trying to figure out what should belong in Teams and what experiences belong there versus what experiences belong in their more traditional intranets and SharePoint and trying to bring those together. I think Viva will do a little bit of that, hopefully, but I think the biggest part is people don't want to go to several different places for content. And right now, I think the biggest driver of that is the fact that too many organizations that I've worked with are saying Teams is for communication only, right? It's your meetings. It is basically like your replacement for Skype, and that's it. They're not really utilizing Teams for the content and the collaboration piece. They're trying to use it solely as your chat client, which kind of does Teams a disservice, but that's how a lot of businesses are trying to compartmentalize where their services lie. And I think it scares them, when things are very hybrid and cross-platform to create a cohesive experience. I think it's just a lot of businesses aren't there yet. So I think the platform is going to get there long before the businesses are ready for it, which I think as a result is going to return in a lot of IT departments saying, turn this off or we don't want this yet because we're not prepared to have those conversations. So I don't know. I think it'll be interesting. I think the developer community is really strong and there's a lot of great things coming out of it. I just don't know that a whole lot of businesses are ready for it yet. And I think until the pandemic and everything else like that really calms down and businesses can start refocusing internally on those things, it might be delayed a little bit as far as maturity.
Makes perfect sense. Something what we're saying here and there as well. It's a massive opportunity. So we want to help people to adapt the platform, but there's different opinions and the maturity level in country and regional level is different. In certain countries, people are more advanced, and in certain countries, they're not, big differences. Now, coming back on a completely different topic before we go to the articles. Now, you are a good example of changing topics while so you're a good example of a successful ID woman or a woman. Any tips related on or what's your experience related on the community which we have on the Microsoft 365 and any tips for anybody who would be looking into coming to IT?
I think the biggest thing is find a champion. Find someone who's going to be in your corner and be willing to not see what you know today, but see what you're capable of learning and who can help champion you towards, better projects or being in the community. The community itself is kind of its own interesting animal. We've all been a part of it for a long time. And like any community, there's both good and bad things that can come out of it. So I think a lot of it is making sure you stay true to yourself. Write because you enjoy writing. Blog, do whatever you enjoy in the community because you love it. if you're trying to use it for like affirmation or to try to have a better sense of self, it's not going to happen. That's not a good way to look for it. Yeah. So it's a lot of more of, you know, keep your friends really close and, you know, help each other out, but make sure that you're comfortable in your own skin a little bit.
I think it was actually Emily Mancini who said exactly the same thing the week before. Yeah, 2 weeks ago, we had her on the show, and she was saying also that finding a mentor and finding a somebody who can help on this journey is a big thing. And I think there's a lot of people who are willing to help on that journey for sure. It's just a matter of finding those right connections, because sure, there's always bad apples here and there, but we don't need to worry about the bad apples. And let's just focus on the good people, hopefully.
Oh yeah, and I guess also with the thing like mentoring, like for a big part, it's like the willingness is important, but there's also this personal click. Like it has to match.
Sure.
Like you have to find a person who is on the same wavelength as you are, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's something that, you know, I've personally been struggling with for at least the last year. Is, you know, I'm at the point in my career where I know what I know. I also am very well aware of the things that I don't know. and trying to figure out where even I fit in these days is sometimes a really difficult challenge to work through. And I think it's mostly because the lack of, you know, personal connections with people. Everything is very, you know, 10-minute, you know, Teams calls and runs. So.
Yeah, it is. It's very much that. Oh, so we talked about community. We talked about UX career. We talked about many things. We talked even about the music. But there's one thing that we didn't talk about yet.
Oh, good point. Yes.
Archery. Archery. You have passion for archery, right? You are a pro. Is that the right way to say it?
I am a professional archer, and I've been on the pro circuit for about 13 or 14 years. I've competed in world championships, Pan American Games. I was an Olympic alternate, and I actually just switched back to Olympic style, and I'm hoping to see if I can make a run for Paris in 2024 Olympics. So we will see what happens. I actually just got back from a second national competition yesterday night in Florida, and it's kind of feel like you're starting at the bottom of a very long ladder to try to work your way back up in another style again, but it's something I absolutely love, and I'm really glad to be able to get back to it. But it's kind of really scary getting on planes right now to travel, and knowing that if you don't, you know, that last 20 years worth of work could go down the drain. So it's kind of a fine balance at the moment. It's absolutely amazing, and I can't wait till I get to go teach my youth groups and stuff again, and, you know, have that community back. It'll be fun.
That's really, really cool. Now, should we do some articles, and then we'll do
let's do a discussion
in the end. Let's run through some articles. Not that many actually articles from Microsoft this week, which is every now and then this massive difference between the weeks. But hey, it is what it is. From last week, from Nicole Woon and Holland, use SharePoint as a new site template, which is now available as an Amford out-of-the-box template. So there's work being done also for third-party and custom templates. And this is something which we basically, well, it originates from the SharePoint lookbook, and now some of those templates are kind of getting graduated to be part of the product, which is actually kind of cool.
We're
looking into doing this kind of a similar model in the future as well. So testing out templates in the lookbook, and then those who are good enough or they're being used the most, then they're getting graduated on the product as well. There are certain limitations of this one still. Again, one step at a time, but third-party templates are coming up and are being planned, absolutely. And then integration with Microsoft Teams is being planned as well. So we can actually maybe in the future create solution templates which impact then Teams and SharePoint all around, which is really, really cool. So really awesome stuff. Now, from Ian Mikutel from Microsoft 365 blog, new ways of using Microsoft Whiteboard for education. So good example of that one. And this is actually really, really cool on examples on teaching and drawing stuff and reusing images. So really cool scenarios for sure. And making that teaching remotely more useful. Right way of saying that, maybe. Understanding Office Add-ins runtime. So a new article on the developer blog side of the house. So basically what's the latest and how things are working and what are the impacts and the security infos, SSOs, other platforms and all of that. So good summary if you are looking into Office Add-in guidance. On the craft side, there's some EDU new APIs available, so new stuff available related on what were this assignments API. Never heard of, but EDU. So yeah, you can automate stuff. SharePoint Syntex, slightly older article actually, but we missed this because it's in the SharePoint Syntex block, and so we didn't actually notice that. This is really hard to follow up on all of the different articles and blogs out there. SharePoint Syntex has new APIs actually being exposed through the BMP API SDKs, which is a slightly strange approach, but of course, in the longer run, you know, intention is that everything is going to go out also for Microsoft Craft. And there's also BMP PowerShell commandlets for automation. And tomorrow, today, if you're watching this, when this video is going to get released, there's going to be a SharePoint monthly community call where we're going to talk about all of this stuff. So Sean Squires and Bert Janssen is going to do that. Julie Turner had a SharePoint app catalog development tips articles, really cool stuff, a lot of excitement and good insights on how to do automation and how to make things happen. I think it is using CLI, yes it is. Surprise, surprise. Woo-hoo. Yay. Well, it's always happy to see those. Upgrade your SharePoint framework projects to 1.12.1 with CLI for Microsoft 365. Is this now the theme of this week?
Yes, it is.
But basically, how do you update the latest version? And the CLI is always helping there. It is absolutely, it provides a detailed step-by-step guidance on how to get started on doing things. So really, really cool stuff. Don Kirkham had a cool adding a custom formatting to all list views blog posts. So really on focusing on there and how things work and how do you apply the formatting to all of the list views. It's really cool as well. Matt Jimison had a get started on new SharePoint app bar. So how does that work? And then there are, we talked about this one, actually Melissa talked about it in her community demo as well, that you can temporarily disable that if it comes to say, no, I don't want to use it now. You can delay that to be enabled. But it's going to be enabled sooner or later, so it's good to get used to that one and how it actually works. So that's a good article as well. Marcus Miller is back from his parental leave. He was away for a while, getting a new baby, or first baby, I think. How to update it?
Well, the baby, it was there already. He just left. He didn't get the baby.
Yeah.
Stop breaking Vesa.
That's the whole point of it, right?
Yes. How to update Advocate Card with Teams messaging extension and using the Yo Teams generator for creating and that one. So cool article. He's working on the Teams platform side. So really cool stuff from there. And then this story was absolutely brilliant. So Allison or Ali had created a SPFX web part, which then she, together with her mom, demonstrated in the latest SharePoint Framework community call. So, and I think she blew everybody away during this call. So they had a together demo as the final demo from Thursday, from the 6th of May call. And it was absolutely brilliant. So I think people were already letting Jeff Tepper know that, hey, maybe we should be recruiting her in the development team. So it was really
great. One thing you didn't say is her age, right? Because Ellie is...
Oh, I didn't? 14.
Yes. Exactly.
Yes, really good point. So... Really, really good point. But hey, if a 14-year-old can write SharePoint Framework components, that's
and that is not taking anything away from her, right? Like
No, not at all. No, yeah, not at all. Not at all.
They are not always easy. She is amazing.
Yeah, really, really cool stuff. And the implementation is really cool, using React and Graph, Microsoft Graph APIs and all of that stuff. Right. So absolutely brilliant implementation. And for anybody who's interested, have a look on the recording from last week. This was absolutely brilliant. So there was two other demos, by the way, which was really, really good as well. So Luis and Mohammed had two awesome demos as well. But then Alison really blew everybody away as the last demo. Sergey had a update on the SPFX FastServe, so new architecture better extensibility support for latest SPFX. So that's now out, and that's basically speeding up the native SPFX bundling pipeline, so compiling stuff faster, so you can get your components out faster. And he's really good on the Webpack optimization and all of that stuff, and that's what this one is all about. Michael Mendes had a restrict SharePoint list items attachments by file type using a custom form. So basically, how can we do that? How can we lock the attach file option in these things? And what are the adjustments to make that happen? And we seem to be actually doing this in the Power Automate in this particular blog post.
So, Power App.
Sorry. Yes, Power App. You are 100% correct. Well, it had the power, you know, like PowerPoint.
Yes, definitely. It was a powerful application.
Yes. And this one is really cool as well. So Xiao Mendes had a new organizational chart, which is basically a really, really nice implementation for SharePoint 2019 as well. So the same implementation works for SharePoint 09 and SharePoint 2019. It is not, and because it's for on-premises as well, it's not using Microsoft Graph. But it's really, really cool. And if you are using an SharePoint 2019 and running an older version of SharePoint, well, that is an older version of SharePoint, then you can still get this kind of an extensibility and tooling available. Really, really cool stuff as well. Three YouTube videos. So first of all, Paolo had a new video. Paolo Pialorsi from PSS had a patching with Microsoft Graph SDK for .NET. So really cool video, 6 minutes. The summary on that one. Good stuff. And I think he's smiling somewhere in here on a long running joke. Then Giuliano De Luca had a new video as well, SharePoint Framework, what's new in 1.12.1. So doing live demos, and these are really well organized as well. So you can actually jump in exactly to the right topic, which you're interested on actually seeing. So really, really cool stuff. And then April had a new video, April Dunham for Cloud Advocate for Microsoft around save Microsoft form attachments for SharePoint using Power Automate. Really cool as well. And then as a final article from the Recording 365, Daryl and Daniel had a good discussion related on access files offline in Microsoft Teams mobile and how does it work, and having the summary on that one. But that's it for the article side. So we have 7 minutes.
Wow, that is a record.
That is a record. That was pretty fast.
I don't think we ever had so much time left at the end of the show.
That's actually true. This is good.
Or so much show left at the end of the time.
Time for a game of Monopoly? Developer Jenga. Here we go.
Good. So Darcy, what are you working nowadays, and what's happening on this week? Anything interesting? What's you going to talk about?
Oh gosh.
Or just archery.
My life is pretty much wake up, coffee, work, archery, repeat, and homework. I'm actually trying to finish up a second degree that I decided to be adventurous and go back to school for a few years ago. So I'm in my last year, and unfortunately, I'm stuck right now with an advanced calculus class.
Ouch.
So I'm a bachelor for computer science, so I'm not a master graduate or anything, which is a weird thing as well, kind of weird. But hey, these things do happen.
No, it's not. I'm the same.
Yeah, there we go.
It's not weird.
I can't remember. What's the class where you do financial calculations? What's that in English
or
in
statistics?
Yeah, the debit and credit and all of that stuff. And I debit credit on financials. So basically. Anyway, doesn't matter. So calculations of the finance and all of that. I read that course 3 times, and on the last time I talked myself out of it. So
Yeah, I've got that. And then I also have a mobile app development class. So that one's actually kind of fun. I got to create my first Android app yesterday. And, yeah, it's Android and iOS development. But it's kind of interesting because I've always wondered in how some of those things were created and how they kind of came to be. And it's kind of interesting to get very much a high level view of it because you never really do anything like completely useful in school, but it's kind of nice to understand.
If you're a younger person, you're still in school.
To a point, you're absolutely right. If I look back at my school, the IT school, I learned EML. I learned Java. I learned Sybase. I don't think I use a single thing that I learned at school.
But it's broadens your view, right? So it's broadens like understanding how Android applications are Android applications are being built. It broadens the view on understanding that there's a completely new world which I wasn't aware. So it's kind of still something additional. So broadens the perspective.
I think the biggest thing I've gotten out of it, like I've taken C# classes and Java classes and Python classes, and I'm not a strong developer. Like I understand concepts and I can tell you the right direction you should go, but I'm not always going to be the best person to write it. Like I just know that about myself. But it's really interesting working in the IT field and then going back for an IT degree in this case, because you see all these things that school is teaching that is actually incorrect or outdated, or we don't do that anymore. And here's the 10 reasons why kind of thing. It's been kind of an interesting journey of like, all right, how do you take what you learn and actually apply it to the real world versus, you know, trying to look back through the looking glass a little bit. So we will see. I've got, 8 months left of this torture and then another, 15 month MBA program. And then I'm like, I'm done.
So you think now, by then you'll be like, oh, I'm done. What can I do next?
Well, there's nothing is gonna actually make it impossible to start studying when you're older. So it's completely fine. Why not? So I think
student loans.
Yeah.
You just don't have those in Europe.
Yeah, but like that is the debit and credit, right? So Vesa is not the right person to talk to about
it. I'm borrowing from my kids' lunch money. Future kids' lunch money. I think it's good. We'll see. I've got, it was great. Actually, like the best class I took was actually a database class, because I've never really had to work with databases. So being able to learn how to do them, how to do queries, how to actually architect a database was something I found that was like really useful that I didn't know how to do. And I always kind of felt like the dumb person sitting in meetings when someone was talking about primary and secondary keys and me going, what the hell is that? So it's kind of helpful sometimes.
Yeah, but there's also another interesting thing, right? Like at school, they teach you like all the, let's say, the right way to do things. And then reality goes like, no. Like you don't want to denormalize the database because performance wise, you actually might want to replicate some stuff. Like, but they say always normalize.
Academically, it might have been the right way to do. And then you denormalize the date to be its own table or something like that, because we've seen
that classic joke. Yeah, and then you learn about Cube and data warehouses and that's a totally different game. It's like, no. We build our database differently because we need to be able to do analysis on them. And you're like, I know nothing.
I basically think of something and then I call Ervin and go, Ervin, what do you think? And he's like, what the heck are you thinking?
And I'm like, okay, got it. One thing that is still true, do not use a GUID as your primary key.
No.
That is still a bad idea, even after all these years.
Or put your permissions like actually in the development. Yeah.
Anyway. So, okay, that's happening this week. What about you, Waldek?
We have less preparations for build. I'm doing a few things at build. Other than that, the usual role, Rhythm, working on stuff, developing CLI. Same old.
I'm going to actually take Thursday and Friday off this week. Woohoo! So I can't remember when I had a vacation day off. So yeah. Thursday is a holiday. Yes, Friday is a normal.
In Europe,
day.
It is all day.
In certain countries, not all of the countries. So apparently, in Belgium, it's not a public holiday, but apparently in Netherlands, it is. So,
what's it?
Interesting.
Today I learned.
Yes, because Bert is going to work apparently on Thursday. Anyway, it doesn't matter. So, but any last words or anything?
Enjoy! Summer is coming. Hopefully.
Yes.
So long, and thanks for all the fish.
Yes.
42.
But, thank you, DRC, for joining us. Really good. Yeah, good to catch up as well. Good to see you. It's been really long, and hopefully we'll get to meet in the upcoming conferences at some point. So we'll see whenever the world is taking us. So, and for those who are watching or listening, thank you for watching and listening, and thank you, Waldeck, for joining as well. And we'll be back with a new BNP Weekly within a week. So, cheers.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.